Welcome to the newest episode of Walnut Grovecast. Walnut Grovecast needs your support, so please head over to patreon.com/walnutgrovecast to find out what cool stuff you get for as little as 17 cents a day. Yes, only 17 cents a day gets you some amazing stuff. Thank you so much for your support. I have the honor of speaking with Charlotte Randall Yerke. Charlotte was the script supervisor and dialogue coach for many years on Little House on the Prairie. If you're listening to the show, you probably have heard of Little House on the Prairie. She worked with the cast to help basically, and please correct me if I'm wrong here, Charlotte, to learn and improve your lines, and also basically getting hands-on with the stories and all in all making the show run smoothly, because as we all know, what's the most important aspect of any production, right? It's the script. Please welcome to the show the other Charlotte, Charlotte Randall Yerke. How are you, Charlotte?
Good, thank you. Good morning.
Good morning, yes. I really appreciate you taking the time to speak with me. The people who listen to the show love hearing from people who have worked on the show, and we all, being fans of the show, love to hear the details. So, I guess all in all, we were talking a little bit about the popularity of Little House on the Prairie and how it remains to be a very popular show, and it's kind of amazing, right?
Yes, and you know, when it first started, it wasn't even maybe going to be renewed for the second season.
Unbelievable.
And then it just kind of took off. And you know, I was sharing with you earlier that we now, almost 45 years later, are just amazed on the popularity that it is. You know, even more when it aired on TV.
Yeah.
It's quite amazing, the fan base that it has now and the loyalty and just how everybody enjoys those family values that the show stood for and everything.
Wow. Yeah, you know, it's really amazing. Even in other countries, you know, I spoke to a young lady, I think she's 18 or 19 years old, from Japan, and she watches it. I never asked her if it's overdubbed, but you know, she's watching this entire series in Japan, also in France. It's really big right now.
Yes, very big in France.
I think that's what they do in the afternoon. They go home and they watch Little House on the Prairie. It's like a tradition. What years did you work on the set?
I started later in the first season, so 74, and I stopped in August of 82. I was pregnant with my daughter and I stopped working then. So I was on the show just about 8 years.
Wow. So pretty much the entire run. I mean, for
correct.
I mean,
yes.
It's the majority.
Exactly. I stopped right after the Little House, the New Beginning. That was already started. So that was about a year into that.
And a script supervisor is someone who, I mean, what would your job be? Also, I know that you worked as both, you know, you wore many hats probably on the set, but of script supervisor and dialogue coach, what would be your, I guess, day-to-day interaction with cast members?
Okay, so a script supervisor job is continuity. So they're there on the set, close to the camera, writing down what the camera is shooting, how long they time each take, which take is printed. It's all about continuity and matching, how the camera is shooting, like if it's a master scene or a close-up, that type of thing. So they're recording this all in their script. As dialogue coach, my job was to rehearse lines with actors if they chose to if the director cut some lines or changed something, it was my job to make sure that the actors knew of the changes. And then when we were filming, I had my script with me and I would follow the dialogue. And then if something was left out or changed, if the actor improvised or whatever, I would note in my script. If something was, you know, left out, I let the director know. And if they needed to reshoot it to have that line in there, they did. So it's really being right there the whole time. Everything's being filmed and, you know, matching wardrobe. Like with Laura, how she had her braids, if she walked, because when they were filming, we would film all our exterior scenes at one time. And then we would be outside, say, at Simi Valley, right, where the ranch was, the town was. And then the next day later, we would be at the studio. Well, if you have somebody walking into a building and they have a book in their right hand shooting the exterior, when you go to the studio and they're walking into that building, they have to have that book in their right hand.
Right.
So that was one of the jobs of the just making sure everything matched, continuity, like I said, timing, everything, which one was printed, what the camera was, you know, focusing on, the shot and everything. So a lot of detail work.
So is this something that I would imagine that when you're watching, right, just any other films, you're constantly probably watching for the mistakes, right? It's habitual.
It's kind of funny, you know, because you do. You kind of look and go, oh, that's a mismatch, you know. But those things happen, you know. I mean, I'm sure you've heard of things even on Little House that mismatches or bloopers and that.
Sure.
You know, everybody's human and those things happen.
It's
and
unavoidable.
It's kind of funny to try to find those.
I think it's fun. You know, when you see something like that, and I mean, sometimes it's so unavoidable because maybe they had to go back and reshoot, and it's like, all right, they didn't have the, you know, other take in front of them. I mean, it's not like the days of digital where you could just kind of swipe it onto your phone, you know.
Well, and I think even being a period show, you know, you were dealing with things that were happening many, many years ago, but filming them in the 1970s and 80s. So, you know, there were things there and stuff. But on the whole, just a wonderful opportunity, a job to, you know, this was my first experience working in the film industry. And it was just fascinating to see how it all came together.
And we were talking a little bit about that before as well. And how did you come to find yourself in this position? You know, because it's also something that I would imagine is it's a difficult position to kind of come by, but you also have to be good at it to retain it. You know, it's not like you can just kind of flub your way through it.
Right. As I shared with you earlier, my mother-in-law, Mary Yerke, was the script supervisor on the show, and she brought me to work one day, and I met Kent and Michael. Kent McRae was our producer, and Michael Landon, of course. And they just kind of took me under their wing, and just
that
was my beginning. And 8 years later, I was still working on the show. The production company, the cast, the crew, it was a true family. I'm sure you've heard this before. Many of the people that worked on Little House, worked on Bonanza, and then followed Ken and McRae to Highway to Heaven.
Mm-hmm.
They just had this wonderful group of core people that just worked together like a well-oiled machine. And Ken and Michael both respected everybody for their craft and let them do their craft.
You know, I've spoken to a number of cast members, and you're not the first person to say it. I think, you know, everybody saw the group of people that were working together in the same light. Everybody kind of really respected each other. There was a kinship, and there was a certain respect that was just across the board. I hear time and time again.
Absolutely.
And you just don't hear that, though. You know, it's like we're talking about Hollywood here, right? It's supposed to be evil.
And it's true. And, you know, I always share this. You know, we would be out on location and we would have a catering truck there and we'd break for lunch. Michael was always the last one to eat. He always made sure his crew ate first. Kim was the same thing, the same way. He always was right there in the trenches with us. Mm. They never, you know, there was the dressing room. Michael didn't have his own fancy dressing room. It was just how it was there. I mean, they were very, very humbled and very appreciative of the people that worked with them.
I think it translates to the show as well. I think we feel,
yes, I agree.
We feel it in every episode. I think you sit there and you're like, there's literal love on the screen. You know, it's really, it's really great. Now working with so many children, did that bring up any levels of a challenge dealing with this continuity and, you know, learning your lines and stuff?
No, you know, I must say all the actresses, especially the children, were very well, I don't want to say trained, but they were great actors and actresses.
They were professionals.
And they, you know, there are child labor laws. They could only work, I think it was a total of 3 hours a day. They also had to have schooling and stuff like that. So that we just worked that away because there were so many children in so many scenes. It was just how it was. You knew how to do it. And the other thing about Michael, you know, he wanted to be home with his family for dinner and he wanted his crew to be home. We were done almost daily by 5 o'clock, which is really unheard of.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we never worked past 5-6 o'clock ever.
It's really great. I mean, it's one of those things, again, I hear this over and over again, and it really sounds unbelievable, you know, especially for the time. But it's across the board. It's everybody was treated extremely well. And which, I think it just translates really well. You know, people,
and I can't.
I'm sorry, go on.
No. I can't tell you how blessed I feel to be a part of that. I it was just one of those opportunities that just came about. And I look back on it and I think how lucky I was and how blessed I was to be a part of that. And we're still all family. We still keep in touch and see each other and things like that. So it's just been a wonderful part of my life.
So you do keep in touch with, the people that you worked with in the past, and have you gone to
and
any
see
of
each
these?
Other quite frequently? You know, I kind of lost touch after I left, and then about 10 years ago, a lot of us called. Kind of, I hate to say it, with social media helped getting back in touch with people, and that's been great. So I have reconnected with quite a few of them, which has been nice, and seen each other, you know, quite frequently. Many of us live locally in Southern California, so that makes it nice.
Now, when you were working on the show, especially in the early days, before it really found its real success, did you realize that you guys were working on something that was really unique? Because you look back, I mean, nobody was doing anything like this. I mean, just the scale of it is pretty tremendous.
And it's hard for me to say because this was a brand new experience for me.
Sure, so
but I know
big,
the others have said that they didn't realize how special it was going to be until many years later. You know, just the fan base and how people just say how much the show meant to them and how they have those special episodes that really touch them and can identify with. And you hear that over and over from people, and they're just so grateful and appreciative of Little House on the Prairie and what Michael and Kent did for so many people.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And yeah.
Now, what about ad-libbing? Did you have anybody who just kind of decide they wanted to kind of go off script, and was that something that happened?
Not crazy off script. I mean, there was a little ad-libbing, but no, everybody had their own character, you know?
Sure.
Catherine MacGregor as Mrs. Olsen. She was just one of those powerful characters that had that personality where she would do little things, but it was her character. So it wasn't so much, you know, ad-libbing and stuff. And that was part of my responsibility as a dialogue coach and script writer. If something was left out that needed to be in the script, you know, and I let the director know that dialogue was dropped, if they needed that, we would just reshoot that scene and it would be, you know, made to be in. But not, no.
Nothing major happened.
No.
Okay. I've heard horror stories on films and, you know, sometimes people just kind of, you know, I think some people don't want to learn the lines that, you know, they feel as though they want to go their own way. But clearly it wasn't that way on this set.
Well, I think what really set the tone of our show was how Michael and Kent treated everybody. Everybody was treated equal. They let you do your job, and if you did your job well, they left you alone.
Hmm.
And that was across the board, from the top all the way down to, I don't want to say anybody's job was less equal, but they just appreciated and they respected you for doing your job and got out of your way. And I don't know if you've had a chance. Kent did a book. He wrote a book and it was released, I think, a year ago. If you get a chance, get a copy of it and read it. And he talks about that.
Oh, really?
About how they hired people to do their job and they got out of their way and let them do their job. And that's how it was.
Wow. You know, it really does seem as though they also had a vision that they were kind of going for, and they were proving that their vision was attainable by treating people a certain way and letting them get their work done.
And I've heard stories, you know, that not only actors and actresses wanted to be on the show, you know, be a guest star, but crew members. You know, people were heard. This type of production company environment was very rare, and we were all very lucky to be a part of it. And I've heard, you know, before over the years how crew members would just be dying to be on the show, to work on the show. You know, it was just that wonderful place to be.
You know, a little while back, I was interviewing Lucy Lee Flippin, who, of course, played Miss Wilder.
Eliza Jane.
Yes, Eliza Jane.
Yeah.
And we were talking about the pronunciation of Almanzo versus Almanzo.
Yes.
And she was saying that it's like the big thing. I brought this up to Dean Butler as well. Dean Butler goes 100% Almanzo. He's like, that's the way it was pronounced. That's why Laura called him Manly and all this.
Manly. Right.
And I just love the fact that she said, you know, I didn't know how to pronounce it, so I just went with it. And now it just stuck. I was wondering, did that ever come up in conversation at the time? And it's kind of like, all right, well, it's in there. We're going to go with it.
I think more as time went on. I don't think as we were filming it so much.
Right.
But I think as the show's gone on, it's kind of been the joke, you know, how do you say his name?
I love
that that type of thing. Yeah. Yeah. So I don't think at the time that I recall, you know, when we were filming about the pronunciation of his name. But
right. It might not have even been fully known at the time.
Right. That's exactly. Exactly.
So I just think it's funny that, you know, you kind of flip the coin and wrong. So one of the things people always like say to me about the Greenbush twins is how shy they seem to be on camera and how they're always like laughing. And, you know, it's adorable, I think. but I was wondering, like working with them, do you have any kind of memories getting them to say their lines or getting them to say things in a certain way? And
I think that was more Michael working with them. He
right.
was very good with children and had a way of pulling emotions out of people and, mm-hmm. and in a loving way, you know, not a, I don't want to say a hurtful way, but, you know, in a loving way, just taking them and talking with them and helping them work through, you know, if maybe they weren't sure how to, you know, get that emotion going and everything. And the Greenbush girls were really cute. They, you know, started early on the show. They were very young mm-hmm. and everything. And just so much a part of the family.
Yeah, that's another thing. A lot of people grew up on the show.
Yes.
And
I started before I was 21.
Wow. So you were a kid.
And
wow.
I was a kid, and during the show, I got married, and then I left, you know, a couple months before I had my daughter. So, yes, many, many, you know, changes. Like, the children were young and all grew up and, you know, all shared things and everything. And it's just, it was part of a family. Wow. It really was. That's the best word to describe that time in our lives was the family. And we're still family. We still share things together.
Yeah, everybody, they really do seem to get along very well right across the board.
Yes.
This is always the weird question. Did you have the opportunity to keep any artifacts from the show or anything like that?
I do. I have a couple of my working scripts that kept. You know, I say this to many people, if I had known all those years ago how popular and how much, I would have kept a lot more. I have some gifts that I got from the cast members. Pat and Matt Laberto always give. I have a little box that their dad made. It's got a little plaque, a little house on the prairie, and my name on it.
Oh, wow.
I have a pin that Catherine McGregor gave me one year for Christmas, and it's got a picture of three little girls on it. Several things. Michael always gave us wonderful gifts at Christmas, very generous and very thoughtful. So I have a lot of that. I have a wonderful letter from Merlin Olsen from when he was leaving Little House and going to start Father Murphy.
Right.
So I did save quite a bit. I wish I had saved more. But like I said, I do have a couple of my working scripts and a lot of pictures of that time. And so
I think you have a lot
I'm
of,
I
mean, you,
I
it seems that you kept a lot more than a lot of other people did.
Yes.
You know, I think maybe we all get to that point where it's like, I don't want any of this. And it's like 10 years down the road, you're like, oh, I wish I didn't throw that away.
Yeah, exactly.
But I mean, it sounds as though these are wonderful mementos, and it's such a wonderful time that you worked on the show. So when it comes to when it was getting towards the end of the show, when everything was, I guess, wrapping up, you said you were about to have your daughter, I believe. You were having your daughter.
Correct.
And what was like the general atmosphere, at the end? I mean, it must have been like a bit of sorrow, but at the same time, also kind of amazing, you know, because I look back at this. This is the part I kind of remember is at the end of the show, it was a big deal. It wasn't like it was going out on a low note, you know?
No. And, you know, by that time, the Ingalls family technically was gone. Excuse me.
Yeah, they had a phone and everything.
Charles Ingalls. Right. And you know, it was the Little House, the New Beginning, with the Carters being in the Little House and
yes.
Lauren and Alonzo and all of that. And 9 years for a show is a long time. And like you
sure.
said, a lot of people grew up on the show, especially the children. And we're all, you know, ready to. But I think the fact of how everything went from the excuse me, the very beginning, it was hard to say goodbye. And I unfortunately wasn't there that last season. And I can imagine how they all felt when you know, with the episode or the show where they blew up the town.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it's a tremendous episode. It's even from a fan point of view. I mean, this is your, you know, extended family. And in some ways, yes, your actual family.
Right.
It's just one of these things where, you know, from just me, I don't know any of these people. And I'm like crying, you know. And,
well,
you know, but it's a wonderful place.
Those places were a home away from home. You know, Simi Valley, the whole town was there. I was fortunate enough about 2 years ago. We did a little house reunion in Anaheim. And then the next day, several of us went back out to the ranch. And I hadn't been out to the ranch in over 30 years.
Oh.
And nothing's there. I mean, no buildings or anything like that. But you could see everything.
Right. The layout, you could stand there.
You knew where the little house was, where the barn was, where the town was, going into town, the mill, and up the hill from the mill was where they would park the dressing rooms, and there was a big barn, and that's where we always ate lunch. You knew where the church was, where the mercantile was. Everything, you could see it.
Wow.
And that's how it felt. It was just, it was our home.
Now, a lot of times when the area had to become winter, I always ask this kind of question. What was going on with everything? Like, would you walk away probably to where you guys are kind of, you were mentioning like an area where there's dressing rooms and everything. And then you walk over to the, you know, where the little house is on the set, and it's like, you know, the middle of February, but it's, you know, it's just, of course, dressed like that. Do you have anything you could share about that? Like how they would go about like setting that up and how that experience was overall, like turning 80 and 90 degree weather into 2 degree weather.
Well, a lot of like weather type things, like the show with the blizzard, all that was on a soundstage.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
That was on a soundstage. What they would do, like for wind or anything like that outside, they'd bring in these big wind fans.
Sure.
I mean, huge wind fans, and do things like that. But a lot of the nighttime, winter things were all on a soundstage with, it's like fake snow. It's like plastic that they would blow,
that type of
thing.
People look like they're sweating, you know.
Right. And Simi Valley would get very warm.
Yeah.
You know, and that dry, you know, a lot of mustard growing everywhere, mustard seed or whatever it is. So, you know, you just kind of think winter, if it was summer and winter, people were dressed. The cast was dressed in winter clothing, and that could be very hard on them. I know Allison shared about, you know, they would layer and layers of clothing for that period of time and everything. So
sure. I mean, some of these outfits were extremely elaborate.
Oh, yes. They had, you know, pantaloons and the undergarments, and then they have the long socks, and then the boot, lace-up boots, and, you know, bonnets and all that. So that was, you know, could be hard on them. That was a lot of stuff.
And you're just in the corner going, I feel fine.
Yeah. And then we'd go to, you know, we would film sometimes in Tucson. And I remember being there in the summer and hot, dry heat, and sitting there, you know, with a dripping bandana soaking wet around my neck just to keep cool. And all these actor and actresses in their full wardrobe,
right,
you know, having to try to keep cool.
That's incredible. Were there any actors that were more of a challenge? Maybe they were, maybe they clammed up in front of the camera and they needed more direction on that, or, I know, you know, there's some actors that might have a lisp they might need to overcome or something like that. Did you have any type of issues like that?
Not that I recall.
Okay.
I mean, everybody was pretty comfortable. And like I said,
yeah, they were professionals.
If they, oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I'm like, you were saying before they were professionals, so.
Yeah, they were. And you know, there were a lot of children on the show. So things were kind of taken at an easy pace with that. It wasn't like anybody felt pressured, I guess is the best way to express it.
Right. It's like the opposite of Citizen Kane.
Yeah.
No screaming, no yelling, do it again. No,
right. No, exactly. Exactly. There wasn't any of that at all. And many of the extras you see, like in the schoolhouse clips or the church or the townspeople, were crew members' children and stuff, or grandchildren. I know, it was very family-oriented all the way around.
Now, what about changes to the script? Would there be any times where they basically just write on the fly, decide to change everything?
Well, usually if there were like rewrites or anything, we would get those ahead of time. Mm-hmm. They would come from, you know, however the rewrite was done by, usually Michael, or, and we would just get new sheets for our script. And, you know, like if something was deleted or something like that, we would get that ahead of time before filming.
Was anything ever deleted where you're like, oh, that would have been great? You know, like if you were to think back to a certain storyline that maybe they were trying to integrate,
I don't think so.
Like a different universe.
You know, it, for an hour show, we filmed, I think it was 47 minutes. So that was part of the timing of the script supervisor, was to time to make sure that everything we were filming would fit into that timeline. So, and then it, of course, it goes to, you know, the cutting room and everything like that, and having to put everything together. But everything was kind of pretty well worked together, because these crew members and Michael and all of them had worked together so long. It was just so well.
It's a well-oiled machine, right? It's,
yes, absolutely.
Well, you know, Charlotte, I want to thank you so much for coming and speaking to me about your experiences on the set. It's really fascinating to speak with somebody who is physically there for the majority of the time it existed. You know, I love the fact that Little House on the Prairie is finding new fans. I have a 10-year-old son, and he likes it. I don't have to, you know, he can watch it in front of me. I don't have to, like when I was a kid, I was mentioning before, I would have to sneak and kind of watch it. So
right.
My friends wouldn't find out. Kids don't seem to care really anymore. I love the show. I love the popularity that it's found. The audience for this particular podcast seems to be growing. So that means that I guess the audience for Little House on the Prairie is growing.
Yes, I agree. And, you know, I never boasted about my time on there, but when somebody finds out, I'm happy to share, because it was such a wonderful experience for me. And like I've shared, I feel grateful, very grateful that I was part of that.
It just sounds like you're sharing such a similar experience than people who are in front of the camera. And I just think that's really just unheard of. And it's really incredible. Charlotte. So what do you still work in film, or what did you do after Little House? I mean, I know you raised your daughter.
Yes, I had my daughter. So I was off work for a while, and then I worked, I went back to school and got my degree in early childhood development. So I'm a preschool teacher basically now, and hoping to retire in a few years. My daughter is married, and I have three lovely granddaughters, so that gives me much joy. And just, I love gardening and just being around family and friends and stuff like that. So
you need a plow.
I have a very fulfilled life. Yes,
you have to grow some grain. But Charlotte, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And anytime you want to come back on and talk about anything, the door is wide open. The barn door is open.
Oh, thank you so much.